barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Monday, September 26th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I'm Zach Smith, your host. This is the last Monday of September. And then we officially enter, unless you go to Target or somewhere, we've been there for like 2 months, but we officially enter spooky season. It is Locktoberfest around Menace to Picks, if you don't remember, which last October was one of the most epic gambling months I've ever had and our handicapping team ever had. But so much to talk about today. We're going to recap the Ohio State-Wisconsin game, talk about Michigan-Maryland, talk about a slew. I mean, just what a weekend of college football. And we're also going to discuss my guy, Chris, Josh Gattis and the Josh Gattis offense. But just some unbelievable games this weekend. Minnesota looks like they might be for real as they beat the brakes off of Michigan State. Michigan survives Maryland. A&M pulls out a win over Arkansas, which is complete bullshit because Arkansas missed that field goal. Alabama handled Vanderbilt. Not that that's that impressive. But anyways, getting back to gambling, I want to throw this up there. This is the heartbreak of the year. Last year's picks for last week's picks on MyBookie. So our partner MyBookie, use promo code Menace. Go over to MyBookie.ag. Bet single game spreads, money lines, you name it, over unders, parlay things. So that was my two picks last week. The Steelers plus six was going to push until the last second touchdown. The over 38 obviously hit. So I want to give you my picks for today. I'm going Cowboys money line and over 39 in the Cowboys Giants Monday Night Football matchup. So all you got to do is go over to MyBookie. It's a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and win. Go to mybookie.ag, use promo code Menace. They'll match a deposit up to $1,000. Like if you deposit $1,000, they'll give you $1,000 free to gamble. So go lock these bets in. You could tease it. You could parlay it. You could bet them separately. Cowboys money line and the over 39. Go lock that in right now. I'm guaranteeing it. Zeke and the boys got to get this dub, and I think they're going to score points, and that's my edge today, Chris. That's my gamble, my bet. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. I trust you. I'm happy to be back. It's a fine Monday. You and I are like the only two people on earth that love Mondays. Like we both kind of wake up with like a newfound like let's go get it. Well, even though
I love exhausted. It, and there's no doubt I love it because one, I'm excited to start a new week. Two, Mondays are one of our best shows because we recap the entire weekend of college football. Two, you get Monday night or three, you get Monday night football. I mean, it's I love Mondays.
Mm-hmm. I do want to start with this, Zach, just before we get into it. Georgia Tech fired Jeff Collins.
Yeah,
obviously, like kind of there was rumblings of this for a couple of weeks. I'm not sure if that was the right move, but what I do know is that he got 3 years at Georgia Tech, and I think everyone needs to realize Georgia Tech is a tough job to inherit.
Well, it was a tough job to inherit. The good news is the next guy's going to inherit a much better situation than Jeff Collins inherited. So I kind of have two schools of thought. One is you got to cut that guy a break. I mean, he literally came in, and you mentioned it, didn't have a tight end on the roster, like built for triple option. Like that was a long haul rebuild. And to give him 3 years and in year four, he's struggling a little bit. I think that there definitely should be some criticism there for the job that Jeff Collins did, but I think they were trending in the right direction, especially in certain areas. So it just, I think it makes sense in the overall picture. I don't think he got a fair shake. I think the staff was doing a good job. Mm-hmm. But with the advent of the transfer portal, NIL, bringing a new coach in to re-energize a program and get some momentum going could provide a nice spike in recruiting and everything else. And so, you know, there's some coaches on that staff that I think have a great shot of getting retained by the next guy. And now that my call from 6 months ago could come true. Urban Meyer to the ATL. Hotlanta might get Urban Meyer to take over a sleeping giant in the ACC. Watch out now. Watch out.
It's a sleeping giant, and you're right. I mean, you and I kind of talked about it a little bit, Zach. I mean, that staff, when they got there, they didn't have any tight ends. And they, you know, the triple option, they run all guards out there. They don't really use tackles, Zach.
For what? They don't pass set. You don't need a tackle.
Exactly. So it's like you inherit a team with no tight ends and all running backs. And it's like you expect to do something. So they were converting running backs to all different positions to see where kids could play. Just a really tough spot. And they do have some good coaches down there. And I am really rooting for them. But again, just a very tough place to inherit. So we'll see
what they do moving forward. So I am curious in the comments, right? And here's my three options for you. Who should get the Georgia Tech job? Better yet, who could make Georgia Tech a monster? Because it's like a volcano that could erupt, right? It might not, but it could erupt, and at some point it probably will. Who would you take? Urban Meyer, Deion Sanders, or other? Fill in the blank. So that's my question for you. Herbs, Deion, primetime Herbs, or other? Do you have another candidate that you think would shock the world? Give me that in the comments, and let's start to build this list for Georgia Tech on who might be able to take Georgia Tech to the next level.
Yeah, I agree. I expect Doug Belk to be a name that gets tossed around as well if they do look for kind of a young upcoming coach. I'm especially a minority coach like that. But Zach, I'm ready to move forward a little bit.
Oh, we are ready for nothing. My man is in the building. King Bronco is here. So if you don't know King Bronco, he's obviously on some form of psychotics or narcotics of some sort. But he comes in here, he drops comments, and they always get put on screen. But he won't message me or anything because we want to bring him on the show. But here's King Bronco's wisdom for the day. Talking about Josh Gattis, I think, although he called him Cattis. Because Cattis ain't at no how, and Mammy being the laster of it, like the tower ties and them with flakes and trot legs on it, then more worse anything, and it howls. So there you have it. That is the issue with Josh Gattis. He is in the building. King Bronco's here. And we don't even need to do the show. He just told us what the problem was.
No, we're good. It was also interesting is that the fact that never mind. He just pops in all the time. We love King Bronco. Gee whiz.
King Bronco in the building. But obviously, you know, you look at the national landscape of college football, mm-hmm. and it's becoming clearer and clearer. Georgia struggled with Kent State. You can't just totally ding Georgia for that one performance because they looked outstanding against South Carolina, outstanding against Oregon. I mean, Georgia's right there in the conversation. But in all reality, when you look at this, after Michigan struggles with Maryland, I really think this is a three-team race right now, and that fourth team is a complete unknown. And you have, you know, we're going to go through the list later. There's a Sweet 16 left, right, of 4-0 teams. And we all know a one-loss team could get in, but I don't think anyone that has a one-loss right now will be standing with one loss at the end of the year. So there's 16 teams in this race. If you had a 16-team playoff, that would be your 16. Let's go ride, right? There's a lot of question marks. USC struggling with Oregon State. Florida State looks like they might be for real. I mean, their receiving core, I'm getting told all the time, as the number one graded PFF receiving core in the country. And that's the only thing I don't use on PFF is grades, because I rarely agree with them after I study the film. But I mean, Ohio State manhandles Wisconsin. Bama manhandles Vandy. It feels like what we talked about all offseason, a two-team race with a couple teams that'll take their shot. Georgia certainly is not out of the conversation. Georgia has looked outstanding prior to this past week. And then you look at teams like Arkansas, who you thought might have a chance. They lose to Texas A&M, right? Texas, who basically beat Bama, and now they drop the ball to Texas Tech, and Texas Tech's quarterback just runs all over them. Like, the landscape is shaping up, and we're learning. Right? Contender, pretender, our Tuesday segment next week. We will get to it, but it's starting to shape up, Chris.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit more after we get a word from our partners.
I got to show you this. So last week, let's see if I can find last week. Here we go. This was last week's Monday Night Football parlay, 100 to win 500, and Justin Jefferson killed us. He needed one more catch. Stephon Diggs scored three touchdowns. That was absurd. Over 0.5 touchdowns. Treylon Burks had four or five catches, so he hit the over. So that was last week's on our partner Prize Picks. Now, Prize Picks offers a promo code Menace also, right? It is a Prize Picks is you go to prizepicks.com, or you can download the app. It's daily fantasy plays where you make entries on player projections. Will they have more or less? You see it right there on the screen. So here's my Prize Picks my prize pick entry for Monday Night Football. Ezekiel Elliott over 10.5 or more than 10.5 receiving yards, and CeeDee Lamb under 5 catches. So I'm putting those together. It's a triple payout, right? Three times the payout. And you can search on there. You could go three, four picks on there, and you're going to get like a, you know, plus 500, plus 600 payout. So all you got to do is pick 2 to 5 players. And if they will go score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 10 times your money. So all you got to do is download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First time users will get 100% initial deposit match using our promo code MENACE. So go. Our generals chat is back and forth, and our handicappers are helping people pick people. You can do fantasy scores, so many different things. So go check out Prize Picks and lock that in at prizepicks.com with the promo code MENACE. Good call, Chris.
Yep. All right, Zach, let's talk about the national landscape. Now, there's a couple games that we want to go down in order, and then we're going to talk about, you know, college football as a whole. For starters,
go ahead.
I was going to say, for starters, the big one, Tennessee, man. You
what
and
a, what a win.
Said that early place- in the year, Hooker is the guy, Tennessee is the challenger, not Florida, not so-and-so, not so-and-so. You said it. We caught heat for it. Hendon Hooker, again, he keeps steady. They keep moving in the right direction, Zach.
But the thing, here's the thing that you love to watch, right? Hendon Hooker, the question is will a Hendon Hooker for Heisman campaign launch? Because he was outstanding in this game. 22 of 28, 350 yards, 2 passing touchdowns. He ran the ball 13 times for 112 yards and a touchdown. They were 6 for 9 on third downs. He was a perfect 3 for 3 on deep balls. He had a 94% adjusted completion percentage versus base defense. Now, they didn't ask him to do a ton, but they are asking him to do more every week, right? He was very limited, a lot of RPOs early. And he only threw 6 intermediate throws in this game where he was 50%. Not bad, nothing to write home about. But I think the interesting thing is Hendon Hooker's made out to be this athletic quarterback that, you know, gets the benefit of play action and RPOs because he can run and Tennessee's got a nice run game built. But he was 80% on drop back pass. Pure drop back pass, he was 16 of 20. So I think that's an indication that this kid's a better thrower than you think, right? Now, on the RPOs and play action, he averaged over 18 yards per attempt, which is nuts. But he was dominant. And you know what? Tennessee looked really, really good. And obviously, I predicted Tennessee to win. They ended up winning by whatever, 5 or 6. They only had 6 missed tackles. Florida had 3. This was a very, very clean game. Tennessee just needs to improve ball security. They fumbled twice, which that's going to kill them. When they play a better team, that's going to kill them unless the other team does what Florida does and hands them the ball twice back and it equalizes it. But they got to get their ball security in line. That comes down to coaching and practicing it in games. But I think the most important thing here is this Florida team is not a bad team. People are going to make them out to be like Florida stinks. Florida's not a bad team. AR-15 actually threw the ball well on Tennessee's secondary. And I think that's Tennessee's biggest question mark right now is, if AR-15 can throw it on him, what is Bryce Young going to do, right? What will Stetson Bennett do? And that's the biggest question mark here. But I think the one thing of note is they did this. They beat Florida, right? A solid team without their best offensive weapon outside of Hendon Hooker and Cedric Tillman. So I think they're thanking God that Brew McCoy got eligible because he ended up going over 100 yards and was kind of a mainstay on that offense. But Tennessee's looking like they might be able to contend with some of these big time teams in Alabama and Georgia.
No, I'm really close, Zach. Like, I'm really close to saying it. Hendon Hooker is exceptional. This is a big time win. And for me, this win meant a lot because they survived Florida's best shot. Like, that's Anthony Richardson that we thought, that Florida fans at least thought, with the generational quote unquote, that he's putting it all together. That's the guy. Like, he caught a lot of criticism in the last couple weeks for not throwing a touchdown pass, for kind of being half the field reader. They survived Anthony Richardson's best shot. And Hendon Hooker looked like the Heisman finalist. He led them in rushing, Zach. 17 attempts for, what, 113 yards and a touchdown, on top of being really composed in the pass game as well. Like, I text you during the game. Like, his feel for the game, like, he feels like he's been in college for 8 years the way he's playing quarterback there. Now, he does have a couple of the headache, like the big misses, but Hendon Hooker is it. And I'm close to saying it, Zach. Like, he is challenging for the best quarterback in the SEC. Like, I don't care what anybody says. Like,
He's not there yet, but he's shown enough to tell you that there's a chance he gets there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that he's going to be better than Bryce Young. I think he has a chance to be better than Stetson Bennett. But the reality is he's shown enough that there's a chance that – and you know, all it takes is a Heisman moment. That kid played outstanding against Georgia last year. Tennessee just wasn't quite there yet. I think what they have now on offensive skill, and their secondary is the biggest concern on the team, I think they're better equipped to have that unicorn magical game where they beat Bama or beat Georgia. I don't know that they beat both. And to be honest, for Tennessee's sake, they want to beat Georgia, because if Tennessee can make it to Atlanta, that is a massive win for Josh Heupel in recruiting and everything else. If they beat Bama, lose to Georgia, don't go to Atlanta, still a great year, still will have momentum. But the one they really want is Georgia. That's the one they really have to get. And I think that's the team that they have the best shot of beating.
Yeah, I agree. And if you look at Hendon Hooker's stats, Zach, he's got more passing yards than Bryce Young, less passing touchdowns, and less interceptions. And then obviously more rushing yards. Like Hendon Hooker has been in.
Listen, we can shit on teams all we want. Pitt and Florida, no matter how good they are at the end of the year, they're more formidable of an opponent than most people have played in two games, right?
Exactly.
Like Ohio State, Wisconsin, Notre Dame. Who has the better quality opponents right now? It's kind of negligible. It's kind of a wash. Notre Dame or Pitt, I don't know. Both, I think, are average, right? Florida or Wisconsin. I think Florida probably beats Wisconsin. So when you look at who they've played, it's not some stellar opponent list. But through four games, that's two okay opponents.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm really excited for Hendon Hooker. He's my favorite quarterback outside the Big Ten, Zach. And coming up, they got LSU, and then the real test. Like, to be the best, you have to beat the best. Circle that game against Alabama. That's the one. If Hendon Hooker is going to get his midseason Heisman moment, that will be it.
And they get him at home. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell you what.
Rocky Top.
Tennessee has not been in many conversations of mine for one of the top atmospheres in college football because they've been somewhat irrelevant. And so as good as strong as that stadium is, as loud and intimidating as it gets, which is tops in the country. I mean, it's top three, top four for sure. When they're good, when they have hype and momentum, beating Florida, if they can go beat LSU and roll into that Bama game at home undefeated, you know, game day's coming back. You know, the late kick with Josh Pate will be there. You know, it'll be the show again. And that place will be electric. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about it. I'm just something about that game that I feel like Tennessee's due for an upset win. I don't know that they can beat Alabama. I don't know that that's the one, but I think they got a real shot against Georgia.
Yeah, man, they're like that kid on the basketball team that they can shoot, but you haven't seen it in games. And then that one game, you just feel like they're just going to, I mean, he's just going to fill it up. Like, there's going to be the one game where Hendon Hooker is going to fill it up. And I'm going to be sitting on my bench, my Tennessee shirt, saying, look, we told you. We told you, we told you. Not AR. It's been about Hendon the entire offseason.
There's no doubt. And we'll find out more about Bama and Tennessee next week before we actually like go through predictions. But I don't know that I'll say it again. I don't think they're going to beat Bama. I don't think they're there yet. But that Georgia game I have circled as an upset for sure.
Yeah. I mean, especially given how Georgia looked last week. And we'll talk about that in a sec. Zach, Michigan, Maryland, what do you think? What you got?
Well, I think Maryland was exactly what we thought they were, right? I mean, And to be honest, both teams seem pretty well coached. I mean, you look at missed tackles, which is always my first indication of how well coached a team is. I mean, Michigan had 7 missed tackles. Maryland had 9. So both single digits, didn't kill themselves in the open field. And the problem was Maryland turned the ball over 3 times.
Yeah.
I mean, they were 9 of 14 on what I call menace third downs, a combination of third and fourth downs. Cause you even saw it against Ohio State. There's times where you're going to, you know, run the ball on 3rd and 6 just to either get it or go for it on 4th and 1. So 9 of 14, that's 64%. That's outstanding in a game like this. Michigan was 50%, which wasn't terrible. They were honestly very similar outside of turnovers. JJ McCarthy has a lot to prove and a ways to go, but again, it's early and he's a rookie. I mean, he was 1 for 8 on deep balls. If he can start connecting there, and I think the biggest issue is I still don't believe in this receiving core at all. Mm-hmm. And 1 for 8 on deep balls is not going to open up the offense like he needs it to. I mean, he was 5 for 12 on throws over 10 yards, but he was a perfect 4 for 4 on intermediate throws. So the real glaring part is he's got to start hitting those deep balls. His wideouts need to get open. They need to track the ball. They need to get that extra gear to get to it. And he's showing flashes. I mean, this kid was 17 of 18 on all throws under 20 yards. He had 1 incompletion on a throw that was not a shot play, a deep ball. Like, he's showing glimpses that he might become a really good quarterback by the end of the year. He's just not there yet. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it was old school Harbaugh. It was the Josh Gattis offense that wasn't, and Josh Gattis isn't there, right? I mean, he fed Blake Corum 30 times for 243 yards. And I think Blake Corum, we've talked about him a bunch. I think he's one of the top backs in the country, certainly one of the top backs in the Big Ten. But at the end of the day, Maryland lost because of turnovers, and Tualia couldn't connect on shot plays. He was 0 for 5 on deep balls with 1 interception. Both offenses were inept trying to get those explosives down the field. And that was honestly the storyline here. Both teams played really well. They just couldn't hit the deep ball, and Maryland turned it over 3 times. Now, Michigan's rush defense wasn't great, and I think that's a big question mark also. But this Michigan team is pretty damn good, and I think Maryland's better than people are going to give them credit for.
Yeah, it was a really interesting game to watch. It felt like Michigan had no answers for Maryland on the ground at first, but after Talia got hurt, then we kind of saw a shift in the Maryland offense. I do worry about JJ. There were glimpses times where I feel like he held the ball way too long, got away with a couple of really dangerous situations off of that. There was a couple times where they couldn't rally him after holding the ball for 5, 6, 7 seconds. A couple times where he tried to throw it away, but it was counted as a fumble, and you know, thankfully Michigan was able to jump on it. I am curious. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. I'm curious, when does this splitting reps catch up to JJ? Because as a young quarterback, there's a lot of timing route stuff that a lot of times when he held the ball, it was on timing routes. I cut up one of them and threw him on Twitter just because I felt like because Jim Harbaugh's not ready to fully commit to giving him 110% of the first team reps, that at some point you're gonna miss on some chemistry and some timing stuff. And that could be the deep ball issue.
It definitely plays a part in it. And that's only but here's the thing. He's the starting quarterback now. And I know they're still giving Cade McNamara some reps. You kind of have to. And you always want that backup to get some reps, because if JJ goes down, Cade can't have no reps with the first team skill players. So you have to do that. Everyone does that. Even Ryan Day does that. Mm-hmm. But so I think JJ, now that he's the official starter, he's just going to get better every week. And he's honestly not that dissimilar from Bryce Young. He's an athletic kid that can make plays. He's kind of, I won't say poor, but below average fundamentally. You mentioned it yesterday on the call-in show. Sometimes he takes backpedal drops, doesn't take true QB drops. The same shit Bryce Young does. He can't hit on deep balls. Same shit as Bryce Young. I mean, he's not Bryce Young. That's disrespectful to Bryce Young to make the comparison. But he reminds me of an early onset Bryce Young.
Same interesting kind of, I guess, whatever quarterback school they're going to, whatever Instagram quarterback school, it's like that weird square shoulder drop back where you don't actually take a true drop back, and then the kind of shuffle and then hop like you're a second baseman is kind of some mechanical stuff.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think, you know, it's like anything else. It's only week four. And this Michigan team should be able to get through every game they have until that 12th game of the year. And so it's a matter of, what's this development, in-season development, look like of this football team? Because teams get a ton better during the season. By the end of the year, it's a different football team than week one. We all know that, right? That's kind of common sense. So I'm curious to see what Jim Harbaugh can do with this offense and JJ's development in the next 8 weeks before he has to take on, I mean, slay a beast. And it's a beast. Ohio State is a beast. And on the other side of this, I'm really curious to see how the secondary health comes around for Ohio State and what Jim Knowles is going to do to slow down that Maryland offense, because it's a potent passing attack. It is. And if Tulia doesn't throw the ball to the other team and they don't have the fumbles or the turnovers that they had, that Maryland team's not an easy team to beat. I don't care how good Ohio State is.
Yeah, and you predicted that that Michigan would not cover that 17, and you were right.
Absolutely.
So good job. That felt like one of the easier ones. Zach, do you think Michigan's a little soft in the trenches? Because one of the things that felt like in moments they're really getting pushed around by Maryland, who I didn't think was that good in the trenches.
I mean, I think I said it before the year, Michigan fans went crazy. They lost a shitload. And some of those kids were high effort, tough ass kids. Like Aiden Hutchinson he was the number two overall pick for a reason, right? Yeah.
And they had a bunch of good player too. Like, we thought he was super freaky.
I mean, they lost a ton on defense. And I think their offensive line played decent. I mean, I think by the end of the year, they'll be a really good offensive line, but the defensive line was just okay. And that's as expected. If you don't have fan blinders on, they lost their whole fucking front. And yeah, so I think I wouldn't call them soft, but they got a ways to go. They need to improve, because if Maryland's pushing you around, that offensive line I watched on Saturday for Ohio State is the best offensive line in college football.
I heard a Michigan fan compare Blake Corum to Mike Hart. Do you see that a little bit? Or is it just because they're short and light-skinned?
Short and light-skinned. You know how it is.
Yeah, I got you. All right, Zach, moving on. I do want to talk about Ohio State. They put on a show. To me, I tweeted it's feeling like 2014 again. I kind of love – it's crazy because I think that the best hire of the offseason wasn't Jim Knowles, and I think Jim Knowles was an exceptional hire. For me, I was like watching Justin Fry's unit was like, to me, I mean, absolutely absurd.
It's a pretty bold take, Chris. This defense is fucking incredibly different from last year. But here's what you have to love and respect about Ryan Day, right? He identifies problems and fixes them. You go back to the defensive issues in the year where he was the interim coach, and then Urban ended up, you know, resigning at the end of the year. He made swift decisions, right? Fired the defensive staff, brought in Jeff Hafley, and resulted in a national championship appearance because of those decisions. He identifies problems and fixes them, which is one of the key contributing factors to a really great head coach. And what were the issues last year, right? The offensive line was underwhelming. They didn't play bad. They just were underwhelming. Offensive line recruiting wasn't going well. It was just an issue that needed fixed. And what did he do? He chopped the head off the snake, put a Band-Aid on it, went and hired who I believe is the best offensive line in college football. And you look at it now in the run game, number one in the Big Ten, sixth in America. That's in the pass game. They've only allowed 2 sacks through 4 games. In the run game, they're number two in the Big Ten and number seven in America behind Michigan, who had that dog shit schedule. So that I think that will only increase as these teams play quality opponents. They're averaging almost 6 yards per carry. And if you want to see what a top 10 tackle looks like, I want you to go back and watch Paris Johnson Jr., because he will be a top 10 pick this year. Go watch the play with 13 minutes, 10 seconds left in the third quarter. The athleticism and quick twitch he had to pick up a twist that Wisconsin threw at him was unreal. And we'll have it on the film breakdown tomorrow on Patreon, on the coach's film session. So if you're interested, jump over to Patreon. I've said it 100 times, $20 a month or more, you get all the film breakdowns. And if you don't think it's worth it, I will refund you, give you your money right back. So if nothing else, you'll get some free videos to watch. So moral of the story is this kid is playing outstanding. And the offensive line was silly. I mean, so good. The run game was so well blocked. Travion Henderson and Mayan Williams, they were running through fucking freeways of holes. Every style of play, everything. So we'll get to the offensive line more in a minute. But then you look at other problems that Ryan Day had to fix. The defense, obviously, the biggest glaring weakness. They're slowly creeping up, right? They're up to the 32nd best defense in the country. They only average 4.8 yards per play. But it's getting better. We see that. Tommy Eichenberg's playing like a fucking All-American. I think we could still get a little bit more out of the defensive line. They're banged up in the secondary really bad, and they're still performing at a high level, right? So that was issue two. And I think the biggest thing, right, because this is goes back to introspection, like self-evaluation. The red zone offense was a glaring problem. A lot, you could attribute that some to the run game. But you looked at last year and even the year before, Ohio State got down in the red zone, and they didn't score touchdowns at a high clip. Right now, Ohio State is the third best red zone offense in America. They're scoring 90% touchdowns in the red zone. They've had 20 trips to the red zone that has yielded 18 touchdowns. And that scheme, that's run game, it's all of the above. So you look at the three biggest issues that Ryan Day had to fix, check, 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 three check marks. And I think that's an indication that he is a great head coach.
Yeah, everything's moving the right way. I mean, when you go back and watch the game, Zach, I want you to watch your guy, Justin Fry, in the green down there, animated on the sideline.
I watched it this morning.
Every single time, like sensational, like really engaged with the alignment. Even on plays where sacks weren't allowed, being engaged over there, like demanding more from everybody. I love that. In big games, that kind of coaching ends up translating. Like even in these moments where you're winning by a lot, coaching these guys hard start to finish is so important. Zach, everything is clicking right now, and this team feels like the most complete Ohio State team since 2019. Like that's how good they look and good they feel.
It does, and if you want to be realistic, right? Not pessimistic, but realistic. Mm-hmm. There's still things that need to get developed. The number one thing is the deep ball. I mean, CJ Stroud made a killing with Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson, and even Jaxon Smith-Njigba hitting shot plays, and we haven't seen that. Albeit Jaxon Smith-Njigba has been out, right? I don't foresee that, you know, alleviating anytime soon. I mean, he was 0-for-3 on deep balls in the Wisconsin game. He's 7-of-14 on the year this year, which is slightly down from last year. But considering the secondaries they played, I would predict that last year he'd be sitting around 10-of-14 with the receiver group last year. So the deep balls are an issue. At some point, you got to start hitting those to keep everything else from condensing and closing off, right? You have to hit those. And you watch the receivers play. One, Cade Stover. What an unbelievable surprise he has been. He's blossomed into not only a dominant run blocker, but he's, what would you call him? Farmer Gronk?
Yeah, they called him Farm Gronk.
Farmer Gronk. I love it. And he has he has shown that he could be a contributor in the throw game. And I think Emeka Egbuka played outstanding. He is proving that he has elevated his play, and he is on that level that Ohio State expected. I thought Julian Fleming played extremely hard. He blocked extremely well. He ran after the catch extremely well. He didn't show me that he was Chris Olave yet, but it's early. Give him time. Yeah. I thought he showed enough to show that he's trending the right direction. And Marvin Harrison Jr., I'm still not on the hype train as high as he was projected going into the season, but he's getting better. I think he could lose the Louis Vuitton shoes and the Apple Watch.
We like the Louis Vuitton shoes. We don't
they're
like
fucking, the Apple they're Watch. Badass. But I'm saying, you got to be a baller. And I'm not saying he's not a baller. I think he's going to get there. But I think that this receiver group still has steps they can take. And that's a good thing, right? Because they just blew the fuck out of Wisconsin. And I watched the film and I'm like, damn, they could be even fucking better though. That's the cool thing. This is not a ceilinged out, topped out team that is performing on a high cylinder. I mean, they could get better as good as they were in the run game, as good as CJ Stroud was, they could still improve. And that's a scary, scary thing to say and admit.
Yeah. My belief is that this Ohio State offense is so terrifying because I think they're just scratching the surface what they're capable of. Because at some point we expect Trey and Mayan to both be hitting 20, 30 yard kind of doubles and triples. And at some point you and I talked about Trey has the ability to hit home runs. We have not seen that yet. That's scary given the output of the offense has had. Additionally, Emeka has kind of he every single game, Zach, he keeps elevating and elevating and elevating. And it's incredible to watch him play all three receiver positions.
Yeah.
And we know the upside of Marvin Harrison. He's gonna get his. Zach, the Ohio State team, you feel like they are in a great, great place. And also you feel like, wow, they still can improve on. Like you want them to get more sacks, you want them to hit more home runs. Those things are going to come, and it's scary. The fact being is that they're still being so dominant, even though those things aren't happening. And we started two first-time starters outside at corner.
Oh, there's no doubt.
They played so well. They played so well.
They played so well, considering now, not to take anything away from, but Wisconsin's terrible on the perimeter. Yeah, I mean, they really are so subpar at the receiver position. I think I'll tell you the other thing that needs to go noted, because no one has been more critical of it. A lot of it is because of my bias and background, but that receiver group blocked their fucking ass off on Saturday. Did. It's the best they've blocked in 2 years for sure. And it was extremely impressive. Julian blocked well. Everyone blocked well. There was not every game we've had prior to this game Saturday. There's been glaring plays and examples where you're like, what the fuck is that? Is the softest shit I've seen blocking the perimeter on Saturday? Grown ass men. And I'm falling in love with Julian Fleming as a player. I don't know if he's a first rounder. Like people want
to, doesn't he feel like standard. Austin Mack to you? Doesn't he feel like,
yeah,
Austin
absolutely Mack? Does. He reminds me a lot of Austin Mack. That's a great comparison. So, and here's the other thing. Let's go back to the red zone. Talk about creativity. Chris, there was a play where we got in 13 personnel with G Scott and the boys. And ran a little naked touchdown to Cade Stover. Like that's the shit that we didn't have last year. And just kudos to one, the tight end group for being as deep and as loaded as they are. We haven't even seen Joe Royer yet, who all accounts were going into the year. He was by far the best and most talented tight end. So imagine when we get him back, the offensive sets we can get specifically in the red zone. So I think the red zone creativity has been night and day from last year to this year. And the only other weakness I'll say on this team is, and I told you so before the year, I told you when I broke down his defense, I told you this defense doesn't create turnovers. It just doesn't. It never has. I mean, Ohio State right now is 114th in America with only 3 turnovers in 4 games. So that's the one thing that could improve or you would love to see more of. Now, the good news on the other side of the ball is because this is a team sport. Ohio State is in the top 10 on losing turnovers. They've only lost 2 turnovers on the year. So cohesively, they're doing a great job as a team. You wish with with the attack style of defense that Jim Knowles employs that there would be more ball disruption and more turnovers created.
Yeah, I mean, that and sacks are the kind of the things that I would like more of. But again, it's hard to be critical of this defense considering how good they've been. And I can't speak highly enough about I know they weren't going up against elite level wide receivers, but they trotted a true freshman out there, Zach. Like Jair Brown's a true freshman.
Listen. Chris, they were down, in my opinion, their 4 best. Maybe not their 4 best.
No, I think they're 4 best. No, I think you're right. Burke.
Well, I mean, they were down their top 3 corners in Cam Brown, Denzel Burke, and Jordan Hancock, who was Jordan Hancock before he got hurt, was in the conversation for maybe even beating out Denzel Ward, or at least being in a 3-man rotation. And then Lathan Ransom has been the best safety that has played this year. And there's still no explanation for why he didn't play. He was available per the availability report. And I don't want to project things because I certainly don't know. I didn't ask, but it's just confusing why he didn't play. Yeah. Right. Because he wasn't on the injury report. So I still don't know why he didn't play. But the other thing I found surprising, Chris, and because I think they're very even, and I actually think that, in my opinion, Mayan is the best back on this team, that Travion Henderson played 47 snaps and Mayan Williams played 15. And I know sometimes you ride the hot hand, and Trey looked really good, but I was a little surprised that Mayan only got 15 plays. At the same time, he looked outstanding. I mean, the one run he had where he broke a tackle, did a spin move, and got down to the 1 yard line, I was like, gee, this fucking kid is unreal.
Unreal. Yeah, you're just waiting for Trey to pop one. I think they wanted him to pop one this game because of how good he can be. And Zach, I think that complimentary wise, as soon as Stroud starts hitting more deep balls, Trey's going to start popping them. Because that was one of the things last year. Like, Trey was popping his because, I mean, like, what the hell do you do? Like, this feels like we are one inch away, Zach, from the good old pick your poison Ohio State offense. And Ryan Day knows that. And I think that's what he's trying to do with getting Trey all those carries.
Yeah, it's to try to get him going, right? Mayan's going. He's cooking. Mm-hmm. And I think they're trying to get Trey going is what it is. And back, I keep jumping back and forth, but it back to the other side of the ball and Jair Brown. I was floored at how well he played. He was the best corner on the field, a true freshman. I mean, he gave up two catches for 14 yards, I think, total on five targets. So they didn't test him deep, but they went after the corners a little bit, and they just weren't having it. J.K. Johnson played okay. He let up like over 40 yards. He didn't play poor, but Jair Brown was extremely impressive, and I think Ohio State has one there in the future.
Yeah, no, Jair Brown can really, really play. It's cool because he was you know where he's from, Zach? He was a Louisiana kid, and everyone had him crystal ball to LSU. We got him. And then to kind of help him, he transferred then to the state of Ohio, to Lakota West, to play a senior year of high school ball, which at that point, like, LSU went from, oh, we're going to flip him, to, oh, wait, he's moving to Ohio to play high school ball. Like, there's no way. Like, you're not flipping him.
For sure.
First taking that class.
And I'll tell you what I'm most excited to break down on film in this coach's film session on Patreon tomorrow is the Jim Knowles attack plan, because we talked about it a lot all offseason about what's he going to do against Wisconsin or Iowa or someone that puts 2-3 tight ends in the game. And my point was, he's got to go three linebackers. He just has to. This motherfucker didn't. Mm-mm, he just played more safeties. Like, this sumbitch is so in love with safeties, and I get it. I mean, the safety group we have, I think, might be the best in the country as far as depth. We have four or five safeties that can really fucking play, and he's in love with the safety. Jim Knowles gets hard-ons for safety. I don't know what the safeties, and I get it. They're a little bigger body, but they're way more athletic than some of these big linebackers. And it also allows the Tommy Eichenbergs to just, I mean, flash and shine, because he was unreal in this game. And so, just going back to my players of the game, I think you have to have multiple. Tanner McAllister, the play he made at the end of the second half in cover two the hole shot was, I mean, phenomenal. Granted, it was underthrown ball. We could rip Graham Mertz all day, but he was trying to play two guys, speed turned and covered the outside receiver and came over and hit him and broke it up. Otherwise, that's a surefire touchdown. That play he made, the interception, was like, okay, Graham Mertz threw the worst ball I've ever fucking seen. But I think, I mean, that play at the end of second half was outstanding. So Tanner and Tommy Eichenberg are co-players of the game on defense for me. And then on offense, the entire offensive line and Cade Stover get the players of the game for me. I did not see an offensive lineman that played bad. Shout out to DeJuan Jones, because I've been critical of him. He hasn't played well the first three games. I thought he played really well against Wisconsin. And those, I talked about it, that nose guard that Wisconsin has is an all Big Ten player. You would not know that the way the guards and center blocked him.
Mm-mm. I mean, a lot of those plays, our linemen were blowing them so far off the ball, like Trey and them weren't getting touched till they were 4 or 5 yards downfield. Like it's almost sideways watching, because it's like the offensive linemen are running with the running back. It's absurd. They did a really good job.
They did a great job. Just reach blocking people and still playing physical. Like, on stretch, it's hard to get movement vertically, right? It's a lot of horizontal movement. This offensive line got vertical movement on horizontal plays. That's very hard to do. And they did it. And did you know, Chris, to kind of tease tomorrow's like first quarter review of the country, did you know that Ohio State is the number one offense in the country? As much criticism as I give them, and I did it last year too, and Kevin Wilson kind of bit back about it, they're averaging 8.25 yards per play. Number one in America. And we'll have a lot more on that tomorrow in tomorrow's show, but you got to be happy where Ohio State's at. They can get some corners healthy. They can get Lathan Ransom back. JSN's going to come back eventually. I mean, knock on wood, we hope. this team looks like they could really be poised for a deep, deep run and a serious contendership for that golden trophy at the end of the year.
And it's important, though, to keep it week by week. I think they were the team of the week this week, Zach. Do you think there's a discussion or a point to be made that they should be the number one team in the country?
No, not yet. I mean, we got to see it. I mean, we can't overinflate how bad Wisconsin
was. I don't want to be the number one team in the country, but I do think they're the best team in the country. I think
the thing about it is I think right now, if I had to rank it, which I refuse to do, I think Alabama's the best team in the country. And I know they struggled against Texas, but I believe Alabama's the best team in the country right now. I think Ohio State is right there nipping at the heels, and Georgia's a solid third contender. And outside of that, I don't know that there's another team that can beat either of those three. I mean, other than I mentioned Tennessee might upset Georgia, but who that fourth team in the country is, and that's going to be our long conversation tomorrow, is who could become that fourth team in the country, and can they be like a 2014 Ohio State and actually contend for the national championship? Because right now, I don't see it. I see a three horse race, and two of them are beautiful fucking race horses, and the other one's, you know, trying to become one.
Coach, is there a world where Ryan Day does the impossible and gets Jeremy Ruckert? Oh my goodness. Farm Gronk, word to my guy Brody, Cade Stover, the Mackey Award.
Stop it. Cade's been a huge surprise. He is showing that he's a really good player, probably an NFL player. Brock Bowers might be the best player in college football. That's how good he is. I mean, they're handing him jet sweeps, reverses. Like, Brock Bowers is the best tight end in the country. Cade Stover is just pushing for maybe that second spot right now. And I don't want to overreact to it, but no, we got to pump the brakes on that a little bit.
Okay, just of note, do you know who won it last year?
Brock Bowers did.
No.
Who?
Trey McBride.
That's right, from Colorado State. I did know that. Ohio boy.
Uh-huh. So I'm just saying, the voters, man.
Yeah, because he's a senior, and Brock Bowers really was a true freshman that didn't get going as much till the second half of the year. Brock Bowers is right now, I mean, he's outpacing any tight end in the country by a mile.
Yep. I agree. I just think it's funny because they have the same amount of receiving touchdowns, and it was hilarious watching. It's just hilarious watching George Spaces trip out about a potential challenger for the Mackey Award, which I do not think he will be long term. Just thought it was interesting. All right, Zach, we got it. We got to talk about it, man. You jotted it on there. You titled the show after it. Your best friend, your boy, he was the best man in your wedding, Josh Gattis, Miami.
What a disaster this shit is. And before we get to it, all right? Well, one, I want to know. I want everyone watching, 663 people in here. I want all of you to, one, like the video, and two, drop in the comments. On a scale from 0 to 10, how has the Josh Gattis offensive experience been? I'm talking Michigan and Miami. 0 to 10, where is he ranking right now? Because this shit is an epic fucking disaster. And they are so bad. Now, Tyler Van Dyke, you know, going to be a Heisman hopeful at the end of the year, going to be an NFL quarterback, gets benched. Is Tyler Van Dyke the 2022 Spencer Rattler? Or is this solely on Josh Gattis? Because you look at it, 77th best offense in America. Speed and space offense has the 99th most plays of 20 yards or more. Not a lot of space. Very constricted space and not a lot of speed. So I'm confused. This is the slow and tight quarters offense. They have the 9th best ACC passing offense, the 7th best ACC rushing offense, the 7th best ACC scoring offense. Oh, and by the way, the ACC stinks. Just swallow that pill for a minute. Now, to give him some credit, I mean, I made the cut up that Miami then contacted YouTube about and got it demonetized. So shout out to Hurricanes. They were 0-for-4 in the red zone against Texas A&M. They did come back in this game against the vaunted Middle Tennessee State defense, and they went 3 touchdowns and 5 trips to the red zone. So credit where credit is due. They at least improved in that category against a mid-major. But I just can't with this offense. I watch it, and it's disgusting. And I'm going to try to get the film if I can this week and break it down for free on YouTube. And I'm not even going to monetize it. I might make them make that phone call again. Tyler Van Dyke played really poor. And for all the hype, for all the arm talent, for all the shit they talked, 53% versus base defense. That's awful. For 64 yards and 2 interceptions versus base defense. That speaks a testament to his coaching, how he's been developed, and this scheme. If you can't have If you can't throw 70% against base drop seven defense, wow, are you bad on offense? So then he was 0 for 3 on deep balls. So then he's the problem, right? We heard about DJ Uiagalelei. It's Tyler Van Dyke's the problem. Bench him. Bring in Jake Garcia. He'll fix it. He was not any better. 33% under pressure, 2 for 7 on deep balls. So he hit two, but he launched four more. They were 35% on third down. The film breakdown's coming. We got to expose Josh Gattis a little more. And people ask, why do you hate Josh Gattis? I don't hate Josh Gattis. Like, why is he a clown? He's a clown because of his antics, going off on fans on Twitter, like proclaiming he called plays at Alabama. The stuff he's doing to portray himself as a good offensive coordinator, just give me the fuel in my tank to want to just expose whether he is or isn't. How good is Josh Gattis? He sure tells us that he's great a lot. Let's see how good he is. And guess what? Stats, fucking awful. Film, even worse. So to this point, complete debacle of an offensive coordinator.
Debacle. It's been a debacle. And also, in a quick note on TVD, someone I trust kind of down in that area, one of the really good football minds, says that, look out. I mean, TVD, SMU. I mean, we could see that here pretty soon. This is the perfect time to throw the Super Chat up here. We're going to hit Super Chats at the end of the show. This is perfect. But Zach, he was the play caller at Bama. What happened?
Everyone at Bama fans know he didn't call plays that year. Everyone does. Look at Mike Locksley and what he's doing at Maryland compared to what Josh Gattis is doing at Miami. It's not even worth commenting. He didn't call the plays. He coached receivers, and he was gifted a room that was fucking loaded. That's what happened. The receivers weren't that good at Penn State. Michigan's offense was awful, and we didn't see much receiver development there. Now you're looking at Miami, and the receivers can't get open. They don't block, and the scheme's terrible. I don't know what more we can say. We can shit on Josh Gattis all day, but at some point, it's like making fun of that kid in school who's, you know, mentally handicapped. Like, it feels wrong, and like you shouldn't do it. Because it's
times when he was arguing with fans on Twitter with 17 followers saying how he called the plays,
but it doesn't add up.
Like, would right? you it ever argue with somebody, Zach, on the internet about who called plays what year?
No. And never, because you don't have to, right? Just cut the film on, let your offense will back you up. Right. And it's going to be an abysmal year for Miami because they can't get this shit fixed on offense. And let's be clear. They have a whole another problem on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, they allowed 16.3 yards per attempt through the air to Middle Tennessee State. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a bad defensive performance, but the consistent poor performer here is the offense. So I don't want to place this loss solely on Josh Gattis. The offense was just average. The defense was also really bad.
I just want to say the most disrespectful moment in that entire game was after Josh Gattis and the speed and space offense got stopped on the 2-yard line.
Oh,
Middle Tennessee State, who, Zach, you know they lost like 44-7 to James Madison this year?
I did.
That is garbage. Middle Tennessee State ran a 4-verts from the 2-yard line to score a 98-yard touchdown. That's how you play. That's legitimately how you play teams like Akron. Like, that's how you expect Ohio State to treat Akron. But for Middle Tennessee State to do that to Miami, and here's another fun fact for you, Zach. I got one for you. Miami has never beaten Middle Tennessee State.
Well, you mentioned the loss to James Madison, and here's my next question. Is James Madison for real? Because they're undefeated. They beat Middle Tennessee State, who just beat Miami. They beat App State just this past weekend. App State beat Texas A&M. Like, is James Madison for real? Are they Cincinnati?
Are they Boise State? Are they Cincy? Like, are they them? JMU, are they them? Just absurd, man. It's really absurd. And it's crazy. Like, imagine being the offensive coordinator for a school, Zach, and your unit of expertise is the worst unit on the team.
That's the problem, right? Like, I'll go back to when Steve Adazio was the offensive coordinator at Florida, right? He was an offensive line coach, and our run game was ridiculous. Our throw game wasn't great. Well, you can blame Steve Adazio for not knowing the throw game better, but that truly lies on the quarterback and receiver coach to get the throw game where it needs to be to complement Steve's run game. And you could blame the coordinator. Like, if Miami's run game sucked, I would blame Mario Cristobal and that offensive line coach. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. The pass game sucks. So who's to blame? The guy that's calling the plays, designing the plays, and coaching the fucking kids that are running the routes.
for the sake of South Florida kids, because we talked about how much talent there is down there, Zach, they have to move on from Josh Gass at the end of the year. Like, they have to. Like Jeremiah Smith and JoJo Trader are two of the top players in the country. They both play receiver in Miami. They're waiting for Miami to be good, and they're just – and they came up to Ohio State this weekend after seeing what Miami tried on the field. So it's like –
yeah, it's going to be bad. And, I'm kind of shocked that Mario Cristobal hired him. I think that was a horrific hire. But
it almost makes sense in a vacuum, though. Like, Michigan's offense last year kind of was in line with how Mario wants to run his teams. Like, a lot of those concepts.
But I knew what the reality was. And if I knew what reality was, Mario Cristobal certainly should have or found out.
Right. Right. And everybody tried to warn him. So I guess, is Gattis a great interviewer? Like what? Like, how does that happen? But anyway, yeah, Go ahead. I want to move on, man. Clemson, yeah. Wake Forest. What a game. Great. First of all, great game. Like, the reason we love college football, obviously the Brian Brzee lost his sister. So that was a really emotional game for him. And on the other side, Sam Hartman, had the blood clots, is back on the football field throwing dimes. Just a very entertaining game to watch start to finish.
Yeah. I mean, Sam Hartman was the real deal. I mean, 20 of 29, 340 yards through the air, 6 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. And it actually was a better game than I thought. I mean, 0 turnovers for either team. When I expected to watch this game and see a sloppy game, mm-hmm. But the one stat that jumped out to me, and going back to Dabo Sweeney and his cousins, right? The Dabo Sweeney family reunion, right? All the Dabo cousins, and they bring CJ Spiller to the family reunion, like, is that one black friend that gets invited?
See, I got a black friend. They're not
racist, right? This offensive staff, they had 23 third down attempts in one game. Do you know how poorly you're executing on first and second down to need that many third down executed situational plays to keep drives alive? 23 times they needed a third down to move the ball 10 yards. That's astronomical and mm-hmm. speaks volumes to where this offense is. I think that's the highest I've ever seen. In the same game, Wake Forest only had 12 third down attempts. What does that mean? Like, just think about it logically. That means on first and second down, they were getting 5 or 6 yards, at least occasionally, and got moved the chains before it got to third down. Clemson needed third down damn near every possession. Every time they got a first and 10, it's like, well, we're going to need 3 downs to get this because we're so fucking bad on first and second down. It just was shocking to me. And then they had 10 penalties for 120 yards. It just, this Clemson is a phony. I said it before. I said, Oklahoma's a phony. Look what happened to them. They lose, right? Clemson is a phony and they're going to lose a game. Just book it.
For me, like, DJ took over the game. Like, DJ is so unreasonably talented. Like, Zach, mm-hmm. he's so incredible. And he caught a ton of heat when really the coaching staff deserved to catch the heat, because he does some things like he's bailed them out. Like, they have no offensive identity. It's just let DJ go out there and go be a hero. And he did a really phenomenal job. And I was a big fan. Now, just a quick look around the landscape before we hit Super Chat, Zach, a sentence that you and I never thought we would hear. The Big 12 runs through Kansas.
Apparently, well, not if you listen to the Texas Tech post game where that guy said the Big 12 runs through Lubbock, which, I mean, they beat Texas. Shout out to them. But yeah, Kansas is the surprise of the year. And I know a lot of people have been asking about Lance Leipold and possibly, replacing Paul Christ at Wisconsin because he GA'd there. And I do think that's a great fit. But you look at this landscape, and it's a Sweet 16 left, right? The mm-hmm. Big 10 has 4 undefeateds left in Minnesota, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. The ACC has Clemson, Florida State, NC State, Syracuse, of all fucking people, is undefeated right now. Then you look at what I combined the Big 12, Pac-12, which is Kansas, USC, UCLA, and Washington. And then the SEC has their obvious ones, right? Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky. And then you have your two mid-majors, the Coastal Carolina and James Madison as mm-hmm. kind of your 17th and 18th team. So this whittles down as it goes. And as you look at these teams, a one-loss Washington is not getting in the playoffs, right? Mm-hmm. So some of these teams are going to have to be undefeated to make the playoffs. And can we get 4 undefeateds? That's the question, right? I doubt it, because they'll probably sneak a second SEC and or Big Ten team in. But I'm excited to break down tomorrow those 16 teams. Are they pretenders or are they contenders?
Yep, that's the Tuesday segment. That's going to be a really big-time segment, of course. A lot of interesting games coming up as well. Again, you called the Oklahoma stuff, man. You told us they were fraudulent, and this would happen
K-State,
to them.
K-State came in and beat that ass.
Beat that ass. Adrian Martinez, the Nebraska quarterback that has somehow got granted 17 years of eligibility. And Vaughn and them, I mean, and the jerseys that have never changed. Kansas State, obviously, like, not a lot of us watched the game because we're watching Ohio State, but I went and watched it back. They beat that ass. They beat that ass bad. Like, they stole something, man. Mm-hmm. Just absurd. Want to hit the super chat, Zach, before we get out of here, if that's okay with you?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Cool. We did hit that one. Let me scroll down a little bit. I got to find it. The chat's been so active. You guys are so incredible. This is a really good question from Andrew Johnson. Thank you for the five. Great show, guys. Who would be a better player, CJ with JT's intangibles or Trey with Zeke's vision?
CJ with JT's intangibles would be, I mean, you'd be football talking Jesus. About, I mean, generational, like, insanity, because JT's intangibles were the best I've ever seen. And CJ throws the ball so well. If he had that toughness and that just the willingness to run, and I mean, it would be, oh my God, it's not even close. I think Mayan's still young. I mean, Travion's was still young. So Zeke, I mean, that would be an improvement for Trey also, but that bump that CJ would get to add JT's intangibles would be nuts.
Well, and on the flip side, like, Zeke is also super physically gifted.
Yeah.
So it's like, so you're not like, you're not trading bounds. Like, obviously, like, JT couldn't do a lot of the things that CJ could do in terms of throwing the ball, but like, Zeke could do a lot of the things that Trey could do. So yeah. you're not really seeing too much. Maybe we've seen that version, but no, dude, he'd be a football Jesus if he had his intangibles. Big period. Yeah. Legion, thank you for the two. King Bronco is the best part of the show. I think you mean the third best part of this show, but we do
like, love damn. I mean, I love King Bronco, but what's it fuck me for, right, Chris?
That's what I'm saying. Michael, thank you for the two. Why does Ohio State fave Trey when Mayan is a transformer?
I think they're just trying to get Trey going. And don't get me wrong, Travion was great.
Really well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no reason not to play him as much, but I think they were trying to get him going because they really want this to be a dual spearheaded attack. And Mayan still got his, though. I mean, shoot, mm-hmm. Mayan's the only one that scored. Trey didn't score.
Facts. CJ is going to win the Heisman and an Oscar for that play where he tucked the ball, sold the run, then flipped it over the defense to farm Gronk.
That's the play I was talking about. The 13 personnel, G Scott came in motion. It was just an awesome play call and great execution.
Coincidence that the week we saw CJ run was the week before that Wisconsin game.
All of a sudden, they respect them legs.
Coincidence? I think not. Mine reminds me of Maurice Jones-Drew. Wow, that unlocks some football memories for me.
Hell yeah.
Stocky and hard to tackle.
Or he just runs so fucking angry.
So fucking angry. It's absurd. Great week in the books. Great week ahead. Go Bucks. Hashtag Menace Army. Thank you, Brian, for the five. We appreciate you, man. We fucking love Menace Army. I've been emotional this week. I'm thinking about the whole gang. Everybody's so cool.
Man, I'm telling you, and not to throw it out there, but the Menace General chat is unbelievable. I mean, just you talk about entertaining and fun, and it heightens your football experience because you're just going back and forth with a bunch of fucking fanatics nonstop. This weekend was a blast.
It's like sitting at a bar and just having everybody talk. It's really cool. Even if you're really just cool. A listener like myself. Zach, Price Picks is not working in Ohio. That's the message I get when I try to deposit. January 1st, it will work in Ohio.
Not only January 1st will work in Ohio, but get you a VPN. Get you a private network, and you could do it from anywhere. But I do know that. Just look into a VPN.
Yep. We not that we condone that on the show. Sean McQueen, thank you for the five. Can you dive into what you're seeing in Julian Fleming's game?
I mean, I still need to see a lot more. I think he showed me that he has a little bit of burst that I didn't know that he had. I still want to see him get opening. Wisconsin didn't challenge this receiving core playing man coverage. Mm-hmm. So he did a great job in zone coverage, did a great job with the ball after the catch, and a great job blocking. I still need to know if Julian Fleming, Marvin Harrison, if they can get open against a good press corner, because that's what's going to happen, right? I don't give. It's going to happen probably Penn State, probably Michigan, and it's definitely going to happen in the playoffs, assuming they get there. Can they go get open against Alabama's corners? Because it's a whole different ballgame when you're going against a press corner that's going to play in the NFL than it is when you play Wisconsin's average-ass secondary with a bunch of corners that wouldn't play at Ohio State playing zone coverage. So that's not that he can't do it. It's that I got to see it because I haven't seen it yet.
Our guy number 12, thank you for the $2. The eye never in does. The sky never lies. Is that it does, a never does to the camera? And that's is that all I got on the super chat front? Oh, last one. Julian Fleming finally getting his flowers this weekend, man. Shout out to my guy C for putting me onto that phrase, man. Getting his flowers.
That's it, man. He deserves it too. I mean, he played really well.
Mm-hmm. Is that everything, Coach? Good show today. Everybody rocked it out.
Hell yeah. As I always say, be a friend, tell a friend. when this show's over, copy the link, put it in a group chat, and just let's try to make this thing grow. The numbers were jumping today. I mean, that was one of the bigger shows we've done. Our weekend shows always go crazy. But I appreciate everybody. Honestly, go check out the Menace Army on Patreon. I will refund you if you don't like it. That's a simple way. It's like a money back guarantee. If you don't like it after this rest of September, on October 1st, I'll just shoot you your money back. So go check it out. The film breakdown's coming this week. And then also our group chat's going crazy. We have a degenerate chat in there, as I've mentioned, where things get a little dicey, but appreciate everybody. Chris, appreciate you. Menace out.
Menace out.